188. Every immorality is, in contrast to laisser-aller, letting go, a part of tyranny against nature, also against reason. That is, however, not yet an objection to it. For to object, we would have to decree, once again on the basis of some morality or other, that all forms of tyranny and irrationality are not permitted. The essential and invaluable part of every morality is that it is a lengthy compulsion. To understand Stoicism or Port Royal or Puritanism, people should remember the compulsion under which every language so far has achieved strength and freedom, the metrical compulsion, the tyranny of rhyme and rhythm. In every people, how much trouble poets and orators have made for themselves, not excepting some contemporary prose writers in whose ears a relentless conscience dwells, for the sake of some foolishness, as utilitarian fools say, who think that makes them clever, out of obsequiousness to arbitrary laws, as the anarchists say, who think that makes them free, even free-spirited. The strange fact, however, is that everything there is or has been on earth to do with freedom, refinement, boldness, dance, and masterly certainty, whether it is in thinking itself, or in governing, or in speaking and persuading, in arts just as much as in morals, developed only thanks to the tyranny of such arbitrary laws. And in all seriousness, the probability is not insignificant that this is nature and natural, and not that laisser-aller. Every artist knows how far from the feeling of letting himself go his most natural condition is. The free ordering, setting, disposing, shaping in moments of inspiration, and how strictly and subtly he obeys at that very moment the thousandfold laws which make fun of all conceptual formulations precisely because of their hardness and decisiveness. Even the firmest idea, by comparison, contains something fluctuating, multiple, ambiguous. The essential thing in heaven and on earth, so it appears, is, to make the point again, that there is obedience for a long time in one direction. In the process there comes, and always has come, eventually something for whose sake living on earth is worthwhile. For example, virtue, art, music, dance, reason, spirituality, something or other transfiguring, subtle, amazing, and divine. The long captivity of the spirit, the mistrustful compulsion in our ability to communicate our thoughts, the discipline which the thinker imposed on himself to think within the guiding principles of a church or court or with Aristotelian assumptions, the long spiritual will to interpret everything which happens according to a Christian scheme and to discover and justify the Christian God once again in every coincidence, all this powerful, arbitrary, hard, dreadful, anti-rational activity has turned out to be the means by which the European spirit cultivated its strength, its reckless curiosity, and its subtle flexibility. Admittedly, in the process, a great deal of irreplaceable force and spirit must have been overwhelmed, crushed, and ruined as well. For here, as everywhere, nature reveals herself as she is, in her totally extravagant and indifferent magnificence, which is an outrage, but something noble. The fact that for thousands of years European thinkers only thought in order to prove something, nowadays by contrast we distrust any thinker who wants to prove something, and the fact that for them what was to emerge as the result of their strictest thinking was always already clearly established, something like the Asiatic astrologers earlier, or like the harmless Christian moralistic interpretation of the most intimate personal experience for the honour of God, or for the salvation of the soul still present today, this tyranny, this arbitrariness, this strict and grandiose stupidity has trained the spirit. Apparently slavery is, in the cruder and more refined sense, the indispensable means for disciplining and cultivating the spirit. We can examine every morality in this way. Nature in it is what teaches hatred of the laissez-aller, of that all-too-great freedom, and plants the need for limited horizons, for work close at hand. It teaches the narrowing of perspective and also, in a certain sense, stupidity as a condition of living and growth. You are to obey someone or other, and for a long time. Otherwise you perish and lose final respect for yourself. This seems to me to be the moral imperative of nature, which, of course, is neither categorical, as old Kant wanted the imperative to be, hence the otherwise, nor directed at the individual. What does nature care about individuals? But rather at peoples, races, ages, classes, but above all at the whole animal, man, at human beings. 189. The industrious races complain a great deal about having to tolerate idleness. It was a masterpiece of the English instinct to make Sunday so holy and so tedious, a form of cleverly invented and shrewdly introduced fasting, that the Englishman, without being aware of the fact, became eager again for weekdays and workdays. Things like it are frequently seen also in the ancient world, even if, as is reasonable among southern people, not exactly connected to work. There must be fasts of several kinds, and in every place where powerful impulses and habits rule, the lawgivers had to take care to set aside extra days in which such an impulse is placed in chains and learns once again to go hungry. Seen from a higher viewpoint, the periods when entire races and ages get afflicted with some moral fanaticism or other look like such imposed times of compulsion and fasting, during which an impulse learns to cower down and abase itself, but also to cleanse itself and become sharper. Individual philosophical sects, for example, the Stoa in the midst of Hellenistic culture and its lecherous air heavy with aphrodisiac scents, permit this sort of interpretation as well. And with this is also given a hint for an explanation of that paradox, why it was precisely in Europe's Christian period, and in general, first under the pressure of Christian value judgments, that the sex drive sublimated itself into love, amour-passion.